Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Consumer advocates push back against State Farm's plans to raise home insurance premiums. Thousands of birds die in Chicago during migration. How bird-friendly buildings could save lives. How a group of young writers are breaking into the publishing world. And the latest edition of WTTW News Explains lays out Chicago's alcohol rules. First off tonight, Illinois homeowners could soon face a higher insurance bill. State Farm is raising its rates by 27% starting next month, which could cost customers an additional $475 on average. The company says they're hiking prices because of inflation and more severe weather hitting Illinois. But Governor J.B. Pritzker and consumer advocates are pushing back and calling for more home insurance regulations. Joining us with more on the issue is Abe Scar, director of the Illinois Public Interest Research Group, a consumer advocacy organization. We should mention we also invited several insurance groups, but they declined or did not respond. State Farm did send us a statement, which we will get to in just a moment. Abe Scar, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how does a 27% increase compare to previous increases? Because it sounds like a lot.
It's a much bigger scale. State Farm itself has raised home insurance rates significantly in recent years, but it's usually come more than 5 or 10% increments. So this is a massive increase. To put it in another perspective, it's more than $500 million. That's larger than anything we've ever seen, or at least in recent memory.
Briefly for viewers, explain how rate increases work, because seems like, for some people, seems like it increases every year, whether or not the insurance agency or company makes a declaration to the state.
So here in Illinois, all the insurance companies have to do is file it, and then they can put it into place. There's no check, there's no regulation on rate increases. So as long as they file their paperwork, they're allowed to raise rates as much as they want. And they've done that a lot. And over the last 3 years, homeowners' insurance rates in Illinois have gone up by 50%. On average, that's from around $2,000 for an average customer to $3,000. That's more than any other state but Utah in the last 3 years. And that's before this massive State Farm increase.
Okay, so it happens regularly, but obviously not typically to the point of 27%.
Yes.
That raises a lot of eyebrows.
Sure.
Okay, so your group, you all have been pushing for legislation that establishes a rate review process for insurance companies. Tell us more about how that would work.
So right now in Illinois, it's legal to charge rates that are excessive. Almost every state has boilerplate language in their state code that says rates shall not be excessive, inadequate, or unduly discriminatory. We don't have that language. There's no standard that regulators could apply to challenge a rate hike. So that's the first thing. We need to say that it's against the law to charge excessive insurance rates. Then we need to give the department the authority to actually investigate these rate increase proposals and to rein them in. If they find them to be excessive, they could either reject them or modify them so that maybe it wouldn't be a $500 million increase, but merely a $250 million increase.
Governor Pritzker has been pushing legislators to address this in the veto session that comes up in the fall. Do you think the political will exists to take this on?
Well, we'll see. I'm hopeful. The General Assembly has passed similar reforms in the health insurance context in the last couple years. So the department now has this authority when it comes to health insurance rate increases, and those passed with bipartisan support. Of course, Illinois is home to State Farm and Allstate, who are the two giants of property and casualty insurance, and they hold a lot of sway in Springfield. So we'll have to see, but certainly having Governor Pritzker making this a higher priority will help, and we're hopeful that we can get something done this fall.
What's the likely impact of a rate increase like this on homeowners? And could Allstate, could other insurance companies fall in as well and file a massive rate increase?
They certainly can. And again, there's nothing stopping them. They can file any rate increase at any time without any regulatory oversight. And a lot of them already have. There's been about $250 million of rate increases on top of this massive State Farm so far this year, and we're just a little over halfway through, so we could see more coming. And they have all types of impacts for customers. A lot of people right now, cost of living is a concern. This is certainly contributes to that. For some folks, they may have paid off their mortgage, but the combination of high insurance costs and property taxes is what challenges them to stay in their home. And for some people, if you're a first-time home buyer, the mortgage company does require you to purchase insurance, and this may be one of the things that makes it more challenging for first-time home buyers to purchase that home.
Could people find themselves switching to maybe cheaper insurance with that provides less coverage and find themselves in trouble if they need to file a claim?
That's one way that people can save money, is by insurance coverage that covers less or that has higher deductibles. And that's something that we're seeing even with this State Farm increase. Not only are they raising rates, but they're implementing a mandatory hail and wind deductible on all policyholders. So what we're seeing in general in the industry is they're forcing us to pay more and get less. And, you know, you can shop around, and we encourage people to shop around, but when it's a market-wide problem, there's only so much you can do by shopping around. And that's why we think it's appropriate for the state to have some basic consumer protections that virtually every other state has, but Illinois lacks, to investigate these rate increases.
So the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported 131 tornadoes and 142 instances of severe hail in Illinois this year, and 139 tornadoes and 303 severe hail incidents last year. Insurance companies are saying that, you know, the severe weather, which has been increased, intensified by climate change, is the main factor here. Do you buy that?
Yes, I do. I think that there's reason to believe that this rise in extreme weather is contributing to the need to raise insurance premiums. Using the same source that you just did, there were $27 billion disasters in the United States in 2024. That was almost the highest number ever. The highest was in 2023 with 28 extreme weather disasters. And these are impacting us here in the Midwest. People think about the wildfires and the hurricanes because those are dramatic and, of course, caused tremendous damage. But a lot of the catastrophe losses that these insurance companies are seeing come from wind and hail and tornadoes, the type of extreme weather that impacts us here in Illinois and the Midwest. Now, just because that's the case doesn't mean that they necessarily should raise rates by the scale that they're doing. And that's why we think this regulatory oversight is important, in particular because we should expect there to be ongoing increases in ongoing extreme weather. Unfortunately, it's the new normal. All the more reason we should have some public oversight of these rate increases.
So as I mentioned, we do have a statement from State Farm, and it says, quote, home insurance claims costs are exceeding premiums collected in Illinois. Last year, those total costs amounted to $1.26 for every dollar in premium we collected. Such losses are unsustainable. Accurate, risk-based pricing makes sure that insurers like State Farm can pay claims during some of life's toughest moments for policyholders. Or over-regulation and refusal to allow companies like ours the ability to charge accurate rates leads to a less competitive market and fewer choices for consumers. Opponents of Pritzker's call for legislation and regulation, they've also got their own recommendations promoting accurate pricing and strengthening homes against severe weather or extreme weather. What do you say to the argument that the solution should focus more on addressing increased risks and less on insurance companies?
I think we can do both. We do need to do more to lower risks. And insurance, when done the right way, should provide price signals that inform customers about what they can do to lower their risk, which, you know, benefits that individual policyholder as well as all of us by reducing the risk we face collectively. So we should be doing that, absolutely. But that does not mean that there's no role for government oversight of these rate hikes. And just to be clear, what's on the table is nothing onerous. It's nothing extreme. In fact, we've called for stronger regulations than what has been put forward by the Department of Insurance. But we think it's a reasonable proposal that makes sense for Illinois, and the time has come to have some basic fundamental oversight over these rate increases.
What advice do you have for consumers if they should see their premiums are starting to go up?
Well, you can always shop around, and I certainly encourage people to do that while being careful not to make sure that you are putting yourself in a more risky situation, or if you are doing so, to understand those risks when you're doing so. The other advice I would have is to contact your state representative and state senator and ask them to support Governor Pritzker and his calls for reform.
Okay, that's what we'll have to leave it. Abe Scar, Illinois Public Research, Public Interest Research Group, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, two young authors on their publishing house just for Gen Zers.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
More than 100 million birds fly through Chicago during migration season, but thousands of them are killed or injured every year after colliding with the city's buildings. Wildlife advocates say the city can and should do more to protect birds. This week, a city council committee heard testimony on what can be done to provide birds with safe passage and what some of the obstacles might be when it comes to passing a bird-friendly building ordinance. Our Patty Wetley joins us now to walk through some of these issues. Patty, so what makes Chicago so dangerous for birds, and what is the current status of bird-friendly building guidelines?
Right. So Chicago is the biggest city on a major migratory flyway, the Mississippi Flyway. You know, birds have been using this route for hundreds, thousands of years, and we put buildings in their way, and we light them up, and we attract them to our buildings, and they wind up colliding with them. And at the moment, there aren't really a whole lot of protections for birds. There is, under the Department of Planning and Development, their sustainable development policy, which offers developers points for including bird-friendly design in their projects, but that's voluntary, and only about 50 to 75 projects in the city every year even need to meet those sustainable guidelines, which is not sufficient, according to bird advocates.
What would wildlife advocates, what would they like to see in terms of protection?
They want to see an ordinance, something like what New York and Toronto and San Francisco have, that would make it the law and mandate bird-friendly designs for both new construction and possibly retrofits for existing buildings. And those are techniques like putting pattern on glass that birds can actually see. And they point to a building like McCormick Place Lakeside, which, as many of us know, 1,000 birds were killed in one day there. They put some film on their acres of windows, and bird strikes are down about 95% in just one year. So people say there's the technology, let's use it.
Yeah, that's impressive. So what are some of the stumbling blocks to getting legislation passed?
Well, some officials from the Department of Planning and Development say they've heard from developers and designers that using some of that bird-friendly glass can double the cost of glass. And they've also heard from building owners, the trade association that represents a lot of buildings in Chicago. You know, we've got 29-30% vacancy rates. Now is not the time to add millions of dollars to building owners' budgets to spend on this. Bird advocates say, wait a minute, the glass only costs, you know, less than 1% of a building's entire cost. It's not as expensive as people say that it is. And also, if you want to talk economics, the birder economy is huge. A lot of people come to Chicago. We've got one of the top destinations in the country for birders. Those people come here and they spend money too. So there's a lot of pros and cons.
Okay, so there was that hearing this week. Yes. What's next? What now?
What now? I think Alderman Maria Haddon, who chaired the committee, you know, needs to maybe go back to her colleagues and see how much political will is there to actually get something like this done. But I think that Chicago's birding and wildlife advocates have shown that they're not going away, and they're not really going to accept anything less than an ordinance and bird safe mandates for building design. Okay. So they're going to keep coming back.
All right. We'll be hearing more from them when that time comes. Patty Wetley, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Patty's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Teenage years are full of firsts, perhaps driving for the first time, getting your first paycheck or your first kiss. But publishing your first book probably isn't on a lot of teenagers' list of accomplishments. But our next guest did just that. At 16 years old, Aiden Brands wrote his first book, exploring the year 2020 from a teenager's point of view. And Brands didn't stop there. He wrote his friends into the plot by starting his own publishing company. Joining us now with more are Aiden Brands, author and owner of Aiden Brands Books, and Yareed Zaidi, author of The Short Kid from Pakistan. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And congrats on things. You all have published books. I haven't published books, so you've got something on us.
I mean, it's really fun to do what we're doing, and I'm so glad we get to talk about it here.
Awesome. So you wrote your first novel, Aiden, at 16, 2020, from a teenager's POV. What made you want to write that?
Well, you know, back in 2020, I stayed up all night, and I was just kind of processing everything that was going on in the world, and I was drinking a lot of coffee, so I was kind of, like, really energetic, and I just randomly decided to open a Google document and just start writing what I was feeling and what people my age were going through, because at the time, there really wasn't a lot of people talking about the teenage perspective of everything that was happening in 2020, and we can both admit that was a crazy year. So I just wanted to do something kind of unique and put something out that I really wasn't seeing, and that was really what started it all, just from one crazy night.
How'd you go from, like, writing, getting it all out, you know, in that first crazy night to all of those thoughts becoming a book?
Well, I worked on it a little bit as the weeks and months passed, and I kind of formatted it to be more like a story instead of just like a giant rant. And I put the book out on my own in early 2021, and it took a little bit of time, and it was a process, you know, trying to figure out how to do all this stuff. But once I did, it was, like, really amazing, and I got such a good reception from people, especially at my school and in my community in Palatine, and it was just, like, a really crazy experience just to go through all of that.
Eventually, you got in some of your peers, like Yareed, sitting next to you, whose book, The Short Kid from Pakistan, you published. Yareed, tell us about your book. What's it about?
Yeah, The Short Kid from Pakistan is about the short kid who's a fictionalized character, but his story is my story, and it's being put on, and he experiences to learn a new language, move across the world, and just, like, follow new traditions, not used to your old traditions. Like, he's just learning everything new all at once, and it's a really good story. And I've had people who are not from Pakistan, but they said they're immigrants. They said, "I really relate to your story because I went through the same thing."
What was it like, sort of telling your own personal story that way?
It was very nice. I feel like some of it I just needed to get off my chest, so that felt pretty good. But also, like, being able to share my story, which I don't see that much of in the media at all, about Pakistan being represented at all. So I feel like that is a really good opportunity for me to represent my country and my story.
Aiden, why was it important for you to start your own company? What did you think was missing in the publishing industry?
So I really wanted to just see more authentic stories be told, because you look in the mainstream publishers and they're not really doing what we're doing. And the whole subtitle of my book, the first one, Teenagers POV, I wanted to expand upon that idea. And I really realized, like, the world is just bigger than my point of view. And that's why I wanted to give someone like Yareed a chance to share his point of view of the world. And that's really kind of the whole idea, just showing a different perspective that people don't really see or they don't really hear. And doing that has been such an amazing honor, because we're able to tell these great stories that people are connecting with. And for example, if someone doesn't connect with what I write, that doesn't mean they can't connect with what Yareed's writing, or maybe even someone like Evelyn. We're just trying to do new things and push the limits, to be honest, and be unique and embrace our uniqueness.
And you published six books, nine books, six authors,
something like that. We've done a bunch.
Okay. More than you can count,
yeah.
which is great. Yareed, what would you say were some of the challenges with being a Pakistani author, and what did you feel like people didn't understand about your experience?
I believe some people definitely don't understand the tradition over there. Like, we have a lot of different traditions, like Ramadan, and there's a lot of other modes, like Eid, just like our holidays too. But, like, that people didn't understand. But also, like, what's it like living in a third world country with poverty and, like, just, like, a lot of bad stuff going around you that's out of your control?
Right. And, like, also what it's like moving from that to this, to here,
yeah,
basically, to this.
Yeah, moving across the globe, learning a new language, learning how to, like, have new manners, new
cultural
everything.
Cultural norms, yes.
Yeah, culture shock.
Yeah,
very much.
I'm sure. So according to the National Center for Education Statistics, there have been long-term declines in the share of 13-year-olds who reported reading for fun almost every day. In 2012, it was 27% of 13-year-olds, falling to 17% in 2020 and 15% in 2023. And, you know, we've got the two of you. You were currently community college students, but you started doing this when you were in high school. You know, what do you think needs to be done to encourage the younger generation to read more? Aiden, I'll start with you.
I think that we got to get our young people to read books that they want to read, that they can connect with. Because I think sometimes in schools, you know, the students are kind of forced to read these books that they don't really want to read, or they can't really relate to it, and they can't connect with what's on the page. I think that's a big aspect of it. I think there's a lot of things that need to be done. I think it's an issue that's bigger than just me and you read. I think it's like, it's a group effort. A lot of people are going to have to come together and think of ways to raise those numbers, because it's honestly concerning. I encourage reading. I think everybody should read, no matter what your age is. I don't know, you read, you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just agree with him.
Yeah.
It's my point of view is the same.
Yeah. What's next for you, Yuri? Do you plan on, you're studying radiology right now. Do you plan on writing any more books?
Yeah, I actually have a new book coming out soon.
Is Aiden publishing that one for
you?
Yep,
Aiden is publishing it.
Okay.
It's going to be called Apollo Darwin 2. Well, then the title's not fully out yet.
Okay.
It's a sequel to a book that he did called Apollo Darwin. And it's about a convicted felon getting out of jail and just trying to rebuild his life. And it kind of shows how society, it's hard for people who get out of the prison system to kind of move forward. And it's really, it's kind of different from what we do, but it still shows a POV that I think is super important. That,
well, I look forward to reading it when that one is ready to go, because I was on the website. I read a couple of pages of some of them, and they were page-turners. I wanted to see the rest of it. We'll have to leave it there, though. Aiden Brands, your Reads 80. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
Congrats.
You for having
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Up next, Chicago's liquor laws explained. As the weekend approaches, you may be thinking about making some plans. And if those plans include alcohol, you should know the law. Where, when, and how can you drink? Our Nick Blumberg has the details in tonight's edition of WTTW News Explains.
Chicago may have become virtually synonymous with speakeasies during Prohibition, but that doesn't mean the Windy City is lawless when it comes to drinking. In fact, we've got a lot of rules on the books governing when and where we can enjoy an adult beverage. New York might be the city that never sleeps, but Chicagoans can be night owls too. Carousers looking to party into the wee hours of the morning just need to keep an eye on the clock. Bars can't sell liquor after 2 a.m. most nights or 3 a.m. on early Sunday morning at the tail end of a wild Saturday night. Of course, that's unless they have a coveted 4 a.m. license, which actually extends till 5 a.m. on Sundays. If you want to take the party home, you better have planned ahead. Liquor stores and supermarkets have to stop selling alcohol at midnight every night of the week. Whether you rise Sunday with a powerful need to chase away a hangover or just your standard Sunday scaries, you're in luck. A boozy brunch is just around the corner. Thanks to a recent move from the city council, restaurants and bars that serve food can start selling alcohol at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings. You used to have to wait until after 11. And if you want to whip up those brunch mimosas at home, the liquor stores can't ring you up until 11 a.m. on Sundays, but supermarkets can sell you a bottle of bubbly starting at 8 a.m. And some of the barriers to imbibing aren't just about time, they're also about place. The city won't issue liquor licenses near most libraries and churches, or schools, hospitals, and nursing homes. And residents can use the power of the ballot box to banish all liquor sales in the precinct where they live. Perhaps one of the best-known boozy no-goes is in Chicago's adult establishments. Alcohol is prohibited in places that allow fully nude dancing. The city council did ease the rules in recent years to allow alcohol sales in bars and clubs with occasional topless performances, with the intention of drawing a crowd more art connoisseur than base voyeur. Or at least so we heard from a friend. So yeah, we've got rules, but with nearly 200 breweries, several local distilleries, and a questionable obsession with a borderline unpalatable digestif, Chicago is still a drinking town. It just sometimes takes an ounce or two of preparation.
And for more WTTW News Explains videos, be sure to check out our website where we tackle everything from why Chicago's pension debt is so high to why you can't buy cars on Sunday. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm working to preserve the dignity and rights of all individuals.